I'm going to start the recording. This is Empty Nesters class, Sunday, December. Sunday, what's today? April 14th. I should know that, considering I celebrated birthdays yesterday in my family. I wanted to start with telling you about next week. Next week, Jim Frost and Terry Casey, longtime connections to the Otter Creek family, and then Joy Samuels, who is a therapist as well that has some Lipscomb connections. The three of them will be here for a conversation on grief and on how to grieve well, how to anticipate grief, how to know what we're experiencing and processing the grief that is associated with this life stage, whether that's grieving a change in responsibilities, grieving a change in roles, grieving a decisions our children have made, or grieving aging parents and things that we're dealing with as well in this life stage. So they're going to be here to kind of answer those questions. So I would encourage you, I've given them a few thoughts on some questions, but I've told them, said this group might come with some thoughts and some things to ask. So if you have something you would love to sit with a therapist and hear about the grieving process, come prepared with that question or send it to me this week and I'll get it to them so they've got time to think about that. But that, I'm really looking forward to that conversation next week. Tell your friends. Like, if you've got people that you think this would be a good convo for them to be a part of, I think this will be a good thing to be a part of. I partly planned today's class thinking my parents might be in this class. My parents were here at the 8:40 worship, and so I didn't want to change everything I had thought about for this class. But if you're teaching an empty nesters class and your parents end up in the room, like, there's a level of I didn't want to not acknowledge that, but I also don't want to put them on the spot in some way. They ended up needing to go to leave after first worship to go home to clean up and cook for their life group that is coming to their house tonight in Sparta. So they didn't stay, but I wanted to throw up a couple lessons for my parents of what things I have valued watching them be empty nesters. My parents now have been empty nesters. My parents are 75 and 74, I think. Trying to think if that's the correct age. But they're, I have a brother who's 9 years older than me. So a brother who will be 50 next year. A sister who's 5 years older than me. And then, of course, I have an identical twin brother. So since my brother and I left the house, they have in 2002-ish, they have been doing the empty nesters thing. The truth is, they've had my oldest brother living in very close proximity to them most of that time of their life. My oldest brother actually lives in my grandmother's house, my mom's house. And my oldest brother has had a journey in his life, and there's been a lot of seasons of their life they have been. Their nest hasn't always been empty. For a number of us in different ways. But a couple things that I have learned a lot from them. An abundance of grace. I have very much felt like my parents have given us more grace than any of us deserve as far as their children went. And probably some moments where I thought, you're giving a little too much grace in this scenario. And I might have pushed back against some things sometimes from a limited perspective that I had as a young person. But I've always felt that for my parents, that I have always felt like they were going to love me no matter what and no matter where and no matter who and whatever happened in my life. That I've always felt that from them, and I'm very grateful for that. I've always felt a great deal of honesty from my parents. That's something I value from them. And I think Susan and I have shared together that Susan's parents were not dishonest with her. Susan's parents were not dishonest in any way, but I don't think they maybe shared some things that might have been going on or things they were struggling with the same way my parents were pretty open about. There's a lot of transparency in our house. I knew when things weren't great at work or financially or different things that were going on. I knew when things were really hard, we just were a little more aware. That might connect with where we're going later in class today, and that will make sense in a minute. But But I've always felt like my parents were honest with me. I've never felt like they were hiding anything from me, and I've always appreciated that. And then another thing I appreciate about my parents is that they let us laugh at them. My parents are just so content for when our family gets around, it kind of becomes, how can we? I think my siblings bond well over how we can laugh at mom and dad with different things and what we can say. Mom probably takes the brunt of that, but they love it, and there's nothing more that I don't think that they love than sitting around and watching their children laugh and enjoying those connections. And I've always appreciated that as an adult. Sure. That my parents, I hope in 40 years I'm more than content to sit around and Margo and Leo make fun of us and tell jokes about us and
remind inappropriate.
Yeah, this story.
Give us an example of inappropriate.
Of inappropriate.
Secret alignment for you.
Yeah, I was with my mom all day. I'm trying to think of what did we do yesterday that probably laughing at her. Just so a lot of it comes from stories, you know, just reminding them of funny moments and things we think are hilarious. My mom is super emotional and also one of the most loving humans on the face of the earth. And so anytime we can remind ourselves of moments where she did something silly.
Hamburger meat and she...
I'll do a quick story. I'm going to stop the recording real quick. That's enough of that story. Okay. I'll let that pick up on. But that we anything we can do to remind my mom of how silly she is and how much she makes us laugh, we love doing. So I would encourage you to have the humility to let your children laugh at you and to let them poke fun at you in healthy, joyful ways, to not take offense at that. That's meant something to me. That's what I've learned from my parents. That's my shared experience. I guess I shouldn't offer that as advice. That's my shared experience for what has been meaningful to me with my parents. Today, thinking back through conversations that we've had and different topics that have come up, I wanted to go into a conversation on oversharing. And as how do we communicate well? How do we listen well to our children? And how do we communicate well? How do we know what we should communicate and how we should communicate that? So I wanted us to talk a little bit about oversharing. So this will be a very communicative conversation. I'm going to start with a video. I'm hoping audio is going to work. I haven't tested this. But I should have thought through that. We'll see if the video works. This is one of my favorite all-time
Happy
videos.
Happy birthday to you. We love you, Cheyenne. Happy birthday. Hope it's awesome.
Happy birthday, Shai Shai.
Happy birthday. Love you.
Uncle Gene passed away this year.
That is just, you can see why that's one of my favorite videos of all time. How many of you have that family member? Do you have that family member somewhere in your family? Yeah. So my family, Susan's family is an oversharer. Overshares medical information. That when we're with Susan's family, it is like everybody's oversharing updates and medical things that we're just like, that was more information than I needed to know about so-and-so's UTI. My family tends to overshare with like local drama or different things. Susan regularly is like, how do you know so many people who are in jail? Like, how do you know them? Because it's like every time we're with my parents, they're like, well, did you hear about so and so? And Susan's just like, I don't understand how you grew up with so many people who have lived. I was like, it's a small town. It just happens. It's there in there for the weekend and in their home and it's fine. It's a different world. But we both have experienced that of those elements of oversharing. We learn some lessons in oversharing on a personal level too with how we shared as young adults with our older parents, with our parents. And so this is a thing that goes both ways. And that's kind of the conversation I want to get into is sort of the, how do we discern what parts of our story are worth sharing?
An experience I've had since we've moved here, been more involved with our adult children, is my daughter oversharing with me.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, telling her the details of things that are going on that I'd rather not know.
Yeah.
And I don't think she wants me to comment on them. Because if I do, it's like for a know-it-all. So it's like I want to say, please keep that to yourself. But then I don't want her not to feel like she can tell me things.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, sometimes it's a burden. It's like, I don't know that I need to know about that argument you had or that.
That's exactly the conversation I want us to have today.
So Wendy has to share that with me.
Yeah.
I really don't care.
How do you set the question? I don't care. Yeah, it just, it's like, oh my gosh, this is going on with their mother-in-law. And he's like, why do you care? I'm like, I get.
Yeah. The one more personal anecdote, and then I'll kind of just throw some questions out to the group. We went through the in vitro process with our children, and of course it was a long, arduous process. Kind of when we were starting, and we were pretty open. We probably overshared the first time through this process, and learned a lesson that wasn't great for us, because the first implantation, the first time. That they actually took an embryo and did the implantation. It didn't take. It wasn't like a miscarriage or anything. It just didn't. It just the same way that anybody's body. It just didn't take. It just didn't happen. But we had told everybody in our family knew Susan was going in for implantation, and this was happening on this day, and they all knew we would know in 2 weeks if it happened or didn't happen, and then it didn't happen. After those 2 weeks, which I remember I had to leave for camp that morning, like that we found out. And I just remember us getting through that process and being like, that sucked. Like it was miserable having to like keep everybody updated and let everybody know this didn't work and it was not going on. And so then after that, we kind of tightened the screws a lot, and we're like, we're not going to invite everybody into this process the next time around, and we didn't, and the next one was the next implantation we had was Margot, who celebrated her 6th birthday yesterday. We found out the day of the eclipse in 2017 was when we found out we were expecting, but we learned some lessons, and then learned some lessons the experience the next time around. Most of our family, I think, was a little shocked. It had happened, period, because we weren't as communicative as we had been. We just had kind of learned what to share and what not to share and how to be appropriate, because it was just a harder thing than we wanted to go through, if I'm honest. We just didn't want to have to tell people what was going on. I'm not saying that's healthy or unhealthy. I'm just saying that was our experience. And so my question's kind of to get the convo going, and I just want today to be very conversational, starting with what parts of my life and story are important to share? How do I keep from putting unreasonable expectations or burdens on my children? How do I know what is mine to carry alone and what is ours to carry together? How do I discern what is someone else's story to share? You know what I mean by that? How do I discern when one of my kids tells me something, how do I discern, that's their story to tell everybody else. That's not my story to tell everybody. How do I discern that? So starting with this question, what filters do you use in determining what your children need to know and what they don't need to know? You know, when you're thinking about those things and conversations you're having, do you have any filters that you're using internally in your brain, consciously or subconsciously, to say, what do they need to know and what do they not need to know? How do you think through that? Or how might you think through that?
People, all right, like what I'm trying to do, my parents undershared, dramatically undershared.
Yeah.
Never told us anything. Medical, what was going on with family members, why family members were at odds with each other, literally nothing. And so I have probably swung too far the other direction,
mm-hmm.
and when something comes up or something difficult is going on, I just tell them.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's the right thing, and I don't know how far I've swung the other direction, but I'm trying to involve them in the adult life of the family, whereas my generation were not involved in the generation above's anything.
Yeah. So a bit reactionary or trying to give them an experience you didn't have. You're trying to invite them into something you weren't.
Treat them as adults.
Yeah.
Because I felt like we were treated permanently as the younger generation and never given information.
Those of you who were here last week, we kind of had some of the conversation related to friendship, our children being friends with each other as adults. But one of the themes of that conversation that came up was most of us didn't have great models in our life of the things we're trying to model better for our children. Not to say disparaging words against anybody, but a lot of us just didn't grow up with perfect, beautiful models of the way we are trying to model life for those who come behind us. And so there's a lot of making this up as I go, folks. Mike?
I think we always try to think about if it was a personal struggle for somebody else or it put them in a bad light, we felt it wasn't our story to share.
Yeah.
It was up to them to share. If they made a point to say, we don't mind you sharing this with others, then we would probably do that. But we just wanted to, one of the things that we always felt was important, we wanted to respect their space. And anytime we're invited into that space, we want to treat it with honor.
Yeah.
And so actually anything they tell us other than funny stuff and, just general stuff of life, we don't make it a point to share at all.
That's great.
And the other piece is our children are all different. Like you're talking about your daughter, we have two daughters and a son, and the girls share a lot. And our son, we call it the audience with the Pope when it shows up on our phone. We're like, Scott, I'm sorry, you're in surgery. Oh, yeah. Because he's not, but when we talk with him, he's very forthcoming.
Yeah.
He's just busy and has a lot in his head. But I know better than to say, Scott, you know, I believe what happened to Julie the other day. She and he'll be like, deer in the headlights, like, hang it, I
don't care about that.
So you really, it's according to the child what they want to share. Some of them are much more.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. Yeah, and some children might need different things in that. Were you about to say something?
I'm a reporter,
so
I kind of overshare professionally.
Yeah.
I mean, and so this can be an issue in our family, and we have had to establish some really specific, kind of weird to other people rules for that. So for example, Nancy, because Nancy would sometimes have information that would be very interesting to me professionally, and we would have to have conversations that would start, this is off the record, the same way that I would with any professional sources. And so we probably have pretty different filters when it comes to this sort of thing. One of mine, as far as sharing with the kids, and I probably undershare because my dad basically would never tell me anything that I didn't ask about, is what are my, if it's something that I expect them to do something differently because they have or don't have this information, that is information that I would share with them. And going back to the kids being very different, I don't trust all my kids with
every piece of information.
And so there are kids that we trust with information, and there are kids that we do not trust with information. And I would say that's probably something we have in common.
Yeah.
But also in general, as far as sharing really personal things that not everybody would, I think everybody kind of has their level of what they're comfortable with people knowing about them. And a lot of it's just committing to the bit. Yeah, and if you're
say more about that.
When I had cancer 12 years ago, the thing that I still get grief for, and this was partially a medication-induced decision, but I woke up from the surgery and I had pictures of the tumor on, you know, in front of me, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And so I'm snapping pictures of that and sending it out on social media. And later somebody pointed out, you do realize that was at breakfast local time, right?
I took his phone.
But I was yeah. really, really open with yeah. everything about that.
Yeah.
Not everybody is. I was really comfortable with that. But part of that was, you start doing it, you gotta take it wherever it leads.
Yeah.
And part of that goes back to being a reporter, mm-hmm. where one of the things that you eventually figure out as a reporter is the best story you're ever gonna get to tell is the story of your own death. Because, nobody else
gets to tell that story.
And so if you're gonna start, you gotta go all the way with that. But again, that's not something that everybody's going to be comfortable with, that level of oversharing and the unintended consequences that may follow.
Yeah. On the flip side, or anybody else have anything to add? Filters you use in determining?
I was in ministry while our kids were growing up, mm-hmm. and so people would show up at our house like at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, yeah. and they would be fighting. We would be down in our den, our kids would get up in the room, and or they would get up the next morning and someone's at the breakfast table that they didn't see when they went to bed yeah. that night. And so my son loves to watch Cops, at the time was Cops. And
awesome.
So we said, now we got to keep all this confidential. He said, okay, Mom and Dad, what we got to do is, when we have something like that, you just say, this is a 5030, and it's
going to be that's awesome.
And so,
well, that's creating codes and language of like what's an important conversation and what's not an important conversation. Or that's a great thing.
We would go upstairs, get them up for school, and says 5030. They go, okay.
That's
so
fantastic.
Step right down into it.
Yeah.
Well, we still use that, really. Yeah. If something happened, then why didn't you tell us that cousin so and so was getting a divorce? Well, guys, it was a 503.
Yeah.
Until now.
That's great. That's a really good, really help. I'm glad that happened. Like, you were able to create that moment. As we go ahead, Ben.
No, I was just going to add, I'm not consistent with this, but I'd like to ask myself, Is this gossip?
Yeah.
Am I sharing something that is not my story to share? And then the second thing that I need to do is, why am I sharing this?
Yes. Yes.
I have codependence. I really want my kids to like me. I want them to see my vulnerability and like that about me.
Yeah.
So I have to check myself. I didn't get told anything as a kid.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I want to be a great parent and let them see into my heart. And if my motive is in check, I feel really good about that. If it's me needing something from them,
information from them,
things like that, that's where I'm.
I think that why part of it is super helpful, because I know, and I'm risking the fact that my mother or father might listen to this recording. They probably won't. But my mom also loves everything I do, so she might find this online and listen to it. But I also feel like I would say this if my mom was in the room. I feel like there are times where, as a adult child hearing something, you don't know what to do with what they have just shared, and there's a burdening or it's like I'm appreciative that you just shared this with me. Sometimes I'm like, tell me what I'm supposed to do with this. Like, do you need help with this? Am I supposed to respond to this? What are you needing from me? Because I've also got other stuff I'm thinking about just with my life and my family. And how much time am I supposed to spend thinking about this or responding to this? And so I love it when my mom will say something like, I don't need you to do anything. I just need to tell you this. I just need you to know this is what's going on. That's helpful for me, because the motives, the why are you sharing this is so important.
I grew up with a mom who overshared with me
yeah.
at a very young age, and it's caused me a lot. And God bless her, she didn't she didn't have a family. Like, she was an only child. Her parents died when she was 23. And has, she had no siblings. She had no, and pretty much I was the person she talked to. Mm-hmm. And she said some really heavy things, and I was young, and it has caused a lot of issues as an adult. So, I don't know why she, maybe she just was so lonely with it. I don't know, but, yeah, it was hard because I didn't know, I didn't understand a lot of it. And a lot of it was negativity about her parents and my grandparents. Yeah, they died when she was 23. So, I mean, she had no, and then things about my father, like their marriage. It was just, it was a lot. And I never really knew why. I had some anxiety issues. And I think it goes back to, I'm a child and you're, and she would say to me, you're my best friend and you're my, and that's a lot of stress.
Yeah.
So that's kind of on the opposite end of like, what you were saying, your kids liking you, they're going to like you no matter what, you know. But I would say, under or over, I would undershare rather than overshare, especially when they're young.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. A couple of tips I just wrote down. I say tips, that makes this sound so trite, but as I was just trying to think through what I thought might be helpful. Clear is kind. That's a, now her name escapes me. Super famous, Brene Brown. Thank you. I should have looked straight to you, Kelly. Yeah, knowing you would have known that name. Clear is kind. I think that's being able to say what you need and be clear about what you need and not leave room for interpretation or imaginations when it comes to certain things. But clarity can be kindness. And if a child shares something with us, asking how far does this information need to go beyond me? You know, asking that of your child when they're oversharing with you to say, you're telling me this. What do you need me to do with this information? Is this a 5030? Or is this something you're subconsciously hoping I share with my siblings? Is this something with your siblings? Is this something you are needing me to reach out to your pastor about? Like what do I need to do with this information? But clear is kind, and asking those questions. I think experience share versus advice, and telling them where you're able to say, well, this was my experience of something, as opposed to just constantly throwing out, here's what I would do in that situation. Finding ways to say, here's what I've done, here's what my experience has been, now you go with that, as opposed to us constantly saying, you should do this. That doesn't always work as well. Mike?
Well, this is one of the things Jeannie does so well. She did as our kids became older, teenagers, and then now into adulthood even. They'll bring something up, and she'll just start asking questions.
Yeah.
I mean, not intrusive questions, but just, well, how did that work out? Well, you know, how did they feel? I mean, in other words, she gets them to, it's her way of getting them to think through what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I think that experiential bag needs to be both positive and negative.
Yeah.
Like, in other words, mistakes I really made.
Yeah.
But this worked out pretty good because I chose to be that way. You know,
yeah.
I think they need to hear both of those, not just always, I really screwed up.
That's a really good, yes. Ms. Margo?
I just love your comment talking about your history with your parents. Oversharing can be our response to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if we're oversharing with a child because of something traumatic within us, that's a form of child's neglect. All right? You're neglecting their emotional ability to cope.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so until the child is developmentally ready, which we as parents should be kind of in tune with that, we should be very cautious about any sharing, right? And ask ourselves, am I doing this for attention? Or am I doing this for wanting relationship? Or am I doing this because I'm so needy and I don't have anyone else to share with? So that's all. In my work, I've seen this a lot, where people come with things in you know, you missed out on a piece of your innocence of childhood. And that can come back later in all kinds of ways.
One of the things I wrote down was finding a therapist instead of using your kid as one. You know, just figuring out how do we...
Which how do we do? Have the option.
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah, that wasn't always there. Like,
I
as Wendy, yeah.
She realized it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We are living in a time where we are so much more aware of mental health needs and more responsive to that and able to find that when we need that. But I think that's so. I think a lot of your parents, my parents, those older generations, just didn't. They didn't have the language that we're blessed with today to maybe to know how to find other tools. I shouldn't have said my parents there, but my parents' parents probably. And another thing I wrote down was don't take things personally, that your children's choices are not a direct reflection of your parenting skills. So when it comes to certain things or certain ways they might be responding or certain ways they might respond to information in any way, just to remind, give yourselves a little bit of grace in those moments, to remind yourself, not everything your adult kid does is because of something you did to them or for them or said to them. Like, that's just not true.
Even if everybody else at church thinks
that. Yeah.
It's got a little free will in there.
Yeah,
too, right?
There's a little bit of free will. I pulled a couple, as we're kind of, it's very close to time. And I have to be in to for the welcome in second service. But I pulled a few things from a book by Jill Savage called Empty Nest, Full Life, which is the title of this class. And I promise I did not know that when I titled. I should have done more research to find that there might have been. I should have assumed somebody had thought of that phrase before I submitted it as a class title. So apologies to Jill Savage. When I found this book, I was like, that's somebody else thought of that title first. But she wrote a book about empty nest stuff, and she had a four sort of things related to oversharing that I thought were really helpful. So I'm going to fly through those really quick. But letting go of expecting to know things, of us giving ourselves the freedom to say, I don't have to know everything, I don't need to know everything. Letting go of expecting to know things. Letting go of expecting their priorities to be the same as yours. Was her second point. Letting go of expecting them to communicate with you like you want them to. So all of this all this class we've talked about, I feel like, since the beginning, is communication and expectations. I mean, that's a big chunk of the way we do life with one another. And then number four was letting go of expecting to change them. So us letting go of our you've done your work. Like, you've done your work to this point. You don't have to change them. You're not going to change them. And so changing that expectation might free you from something that might burden you a little bit. And so I thought those were some helpful things. I want to close. Let's do this. Let's find... I'm going to make this awkward. Some of you are going to hate this. Find another person or couple to stand and stand with, to stand next to. Just find another person. Face them. Just go stand. You're gonna pray over their children is what you're gonna do, and we're church people, so this doesn't have to be awkward. But yeah, y'all can. But I've got a prompt on the screen. So all you're doing. Yeah, I love that you've introduced yourself. And so all you're doing is take turns, and you're gonna pray for the person next to you, and you're gonna say, God be with this person as they parent, and if you can't remember their kids' names, that's okay. Because we're all still parents. But you're going to pray, and then there's a simple prayer. You don't even have to think of the prayer. You just can read the screen. It's there. So spend a few minutes, say a short prayer over each other, and go.